It's always good to see John Woodhouse. I mean, I think I've known John Woodhouse for about 30 years, ever since. Bring that mic close to you there. You know how to handle a mic.
Testing, testing.
Yes. Bring you up a little bit there.
Hello.
I've been reading your book. I'm so excited. Oh. I'm so thrilled for you. I started hearing about this book. In fact, I think we did an interview.
Yeah, we did. Somewhat ago.
A few, yeah. And it was so exciting to hear what was going on. And then I went, wow, finally, you know, after years and years and years of work, congratulations. This is like, if people don't know what it takes to do a book, folks, it's a lot of work. And for someone like who's doing this book, we're talking tons and tons and tons of editing on this. So yeah, this is huge.
We'll tell them the title, shall we, Cindy?
Let's go ahead and give them the title. And I'm going to get ready here for my Facebook Live, Cindy Paul.
Music Legends on Maui.
And Music Legends on Maui has a subtitle that goes on and on.
Yeah, yeah. It's called, you know, interviews with icons of rock and jazz and Hawaiian and soul and reggae and something else.
Well, you know what? That's actually very smart. I don't know. You must have realized that. Because when people do searches for books, if they put in any of those words, then they will find that. That's kind of like a super tag, right? When you put that in a subtitle.
Yes, we smart.
You're smart.
Yes.
But you did do, I mean, I have been reading it and I'm enjoying it.
Oh, thank you.
For number one reason, if you love Maui, you know that Maui is loved by many, many, many people. And that same love that we have of Maui, that you have of Maui, which comes out so well in this book.
Thank you.
Is shared by the people you interview. You bring that up on most of these interviews.
Well, basically, it's done by genres, and the first section is called Maui no Ka'oe. And I just gave Cindy the list. Where's the list?
Yes.
I mean, in the first section, we have George Harrison in Hana, Fleetwood Mac, Willie Nelson, Prince, Paul Simon, The Beach Boys, Carlos Santana, George Benson, Steely Dan, Aerosmith, The Doobie Brothers, Alice Cooper, Michael McDonald, Sammy Hagar.
You don't have to rush. You're just racing through these things. I mean, we got plenty of time.
Okay, we'll slow down. Sammy Hagar, Pat Benatar, Lucas and Micah Nelson, and Jimi Hendrix at Rainbow Bridge. That's the first section. And then we have a rock and roll section, what I call Troubadours, California Dreaming, which is like the San Francisco bands. There's a country section. There's a big Hawaii section. There's a soul section I call Take Me to the River. A blues section, Why I Sing the Blues. And then a jazz section called Round Midnight. And then finally, Reggae Got Soul.
So here's the story, folks.
Yeah.
John's been doing work with the Maui News. And even before that, you mentioned you were at the Maui Bulletin.
Yeah.
So this is how many years of interviews you have been able to capture?
Well, I mean, I started the Bulletin in 1980, and I think I had the first weekly column on Maui, music column.
Yeah.
I think. And then I just started with the Maui News in 1983, and I've been writing for them ever since.
Here's what I didn't do that I envy you that you did. You kept track of
these
interviews.
Well, yes and no.
How did you keep track of all these interviews?
Well, because, you know, obviously, you know, when one has a computer and the documents are on the computer, but I've had computer crashes. I lost a bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, before the pandemic, the library in Kahului, before they shut down, has some Maui News on microfilm. So I'd go through the microfilm because I had a bunch of interviews with Iz.
Yeah.
But I didn't have card copies, but I found them on microfilm. You know.
You could, huh?
Yeah.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
The fact that you did these interviews, I assumed they were all done through audio. Were they're mostly all done either in person or by phone? Probably about half and half by phone and in person.
Mostly by phone, I would say. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you've got to realize, folks, because I've been doing this also interviews for years and years and years. A lot of times when you do interviews by phone, you then have to have some way to record that which you did.
Yeah.
And then transcribe that.
You've got to transcribe it.
It's a lot easier now to transcribe than it was when you started, of course.
I still do the old way.
Do you still do the old way?
Uh-huh.
You mean you literally listen to it and copy it word by word rather than using a service?
Yeah.
Oh, that's very time consuming.
Well, you know, what else have I got to do?
But what's nice about this, and I have to say, I mean, I've had a chance to interview some of these people myself, but you do get them to open up. I think the people who live here know you already. I mean, obviously, when you were talking to Willie Nelson and some of the people that have lived here, they know you and they open up.
They trust you
and they know that you love music as well.
Yeah. So, that, you know, Mick Fleetwood gave me a wonderful quote for the back of my book. And Pat Simmons of Doobies gave me another wonderful quote, you know. So, yeah, they, you know, obviously, they have trust and respect me, too. And so I think it's true that, you know, it's not like I'm in L.A. where I'm, you know, just another dude trying to get an interview, you know. So I think that helps. And, I really spend a lot of time researching the musician, whoever I interview. And I think that comes across, you know. And this book, to me, it's like, I call it a skipper because you don't have to sit there reading it. You can skip through to someone. Mm-hmm. And it kind of covers, it's like a historical document. It's like a chronicle.
Yeah.
Because, I cover things like segregation and protest movements and censorship. You know, Yoko Ono talking about John Lennon being censored. You know, there's all kinds of stuff in there. I mean, did you know Bo Diddley? When you know who Bo Diddley, right?
Yes, of course.
Okay, sorry. Whoops.
It's okay.
In 1959, he played a gig in Vegas, and his band, they all jumped into the pool. All the white people jumped out, and they put a sign up: "Contaminated water."
I've never heard this kind of stuff
you have to deal with.
You didn't say the final. So this
covers, and then you know, I spent a lot of time actually on the spiritual paths of some of these artists.
I was fascinated to see and read about Willie Nelson's spiritual side. I was not aware of Willie Nelson's and very interesting spiritual insights that I felt very aligned with him.
Yeah.
I did not know that he had a collapsed lung. I had not heard that before.
Yeah, I always felt like Willie was like an undercover angel.
Yeah.
I mean, he's such a wonderful being.
Boy, is there a song? I want that undercover angel. Can I make that into a song? That's a wonderful title.
You know, I've got Prince talking about the influence of ancient Egypt, Herbie Hancock talking about the impact of Buddhist meditation on his music, all kinds of stuff. Like Sammy Hagar talking about aliens.
Well, of course, he lived out in Willow.
Well, no, this was before.
Before he became a star. Okay.
He was he had an alien visitation.
Before he lived in Willow.
Yeah, a lot of stuff.
I mean, because it makes sense if he was living in Willow.
And then, you know, Joan Baez at the March on Washington, she said she was like a lion going into battle. I mean, just some great quotes. And every artist, I start with a song title and a quote from the interview. So it kind of gives you a way to, it kind of an introduction into the musician, you know.
So what was the hardest part about writing this book, John?
Oh, well, publishing it.
Yeah, that's always, isn't it?
I mean, you know, I tried to get a regular publisher, but, you know, these days it's all, you know. So anyway, I hired a production company to make it look professional.
It looks great.
Thank you. And, so I'm self-publishing. Paperback's still not quite ready yet.
But it's on Kindle.
It's on Kindle and hardcover. And I found this, you know, to... Who do you think of an icon on Maui? Jimi Hendrix, right? Playing in Olinda. And so I got hold of the photographer who shot photos at the concert. And he was in the new Jimi Hendrix documentary that came out last year.
Uh-huh.
And he gave me permission to use it for the cover. So to me, that's like awesome. I mean,
it's like icing
on the cake.
Yeah. And you were able, I mean, I didn't know that you actually were able to do an interview with him.
No, I didn't interview Jimmy.
Oh, okay.
I've met him in London.
Because you told,
but I interviewed people who were there at the time, right?
And that's how you found out he wanted to move here.
Yeah, because there was a woman, Melinda Merriweather, who was the artistic director on the film, and she hung out with Jimmy quite a bit. And they drove up to the crater, and he said, "I want to move here, and I want to grow grapes and create a recording studio." And he was dead 2 months later.
Wow.
You know what's really interesting? Jimmy, Janis Joplin, and Stevie Ray Vaughan all died within 2 or 3 months of being in Hawaii.
Jerry Garcia.
Was it with 2 months, though?
I think so.
Oh.
And he also wanted to move here.
Yeah. So,
He was here with Bruce Coburn and one other person, and he was just, thinking of making a change. And I think that was within two months. Yeah.
How interesting.
Yeah.
So there's something. Well, anyway.
But you bring up that spiritual point again.
Yeah.
You bring up, and many of the people you interview bring up, that they came here to get spiritually recharged, that they came here because they knew that energy, that intangible element that's sure. so important about Maui. So it, in a way, it makes sense, John, because they're coming here because they need something, and they know and they realize they need something, and then they go back and they just couldn't do enough of what they needed maybe yeah. before they died, right?
So shall I read a couple of quotes?
Yes, I'd love okay. some quotes. And tell us where it's coming from.
This is Carlos Santana.
Mm-hmm.
Carlos Santana recalls feeling blessed the first time he arrived in Hawaii with his original band in 1970. We were in a limousine for the first time, and we went to the house close to the Diamond Head, to this house close to the Diamond Head crater. They were playing George Harrison's My Sweet Lord and Edwin Hawkins' Oh Happy Day. Mm. It was an incredible time to come to Hawaii because God was on the top 10. So every time I come to Hawaii, all those memories flood on my, into my brain. It was a whole experience I'll never forget. The very last day I lived on Maui, a rainbow the size of the island would not go away. We rode from Kapalua to the airport, and the rainbow followed us. I thought, this was the gods telling me, thank you for spending time with us.
I love that. And, you know, I sometimes feel that, too. You've had that happen where a rainbow follows you
oh,
sometimes,
yeah, yeah.
right?
And then shall I read your Beach Boys one?
Yes, sure.
So it was actually the Beatles who turned the Beach Boys on to transcendental meditation. John Lennon and George Harrison knocked on Al Jardine's door in London and said, you got to come and check this thing out. And they said, we'll see you in Paris. So this is Mike Love talking. We had been toured in Paris where we played a UNICEF show. Mike Love explains. The curtain opened, and on one side of the Maharishi, in the middle of the first row, was George Harrison, and on the other side was John Lennon. It was kind of intimidating.
Yeah.
This was a Beach Boys show with John and George in the front row.
I think, did they applaud as I did?
I don't know. I just love that.
Did
they
applaud? You begin with an interesting couple of insights also with Stevie Nicks.
Yeah.
I know she loves it here, and I've talked to Mick Fleetwood quite a few times yeah. and interviewed him as well, but I did not know she actually had a house here or has a part-time
yeah, she
house
does,
here.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and he also talks about, Stevie talks about her remembering going to Hana.
Yeah, with George
with George
and
Harrison
Bob
and Bob Longy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that picture, well, you know what was interesting? I did not know. I'd seen that picture, mm-hmm. but she says that she takes that picture of her yeah. and Bob Longy and George Harrison with her
on the road,
yeah.
and
puts it up before she plays.
Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing.
I know.
It had
such
a
profound
impact.
Picture. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she said. Yeah, I said the two musicians were having fun coming up with lyrics together in Hana. We were writing a sort of parody of Here Comes the Sun, Stevie explains. We were writing Here Comes the Moon because by then we were all such nightbirds. We just hung out and we wrote and sang and we talked for 2 days. I'd been famous for not even quite 3 years, and we were talking with George about being famous and what it meant and what you had to give up. We were rocking and beautiful and crazy, and that was all going down on Maui.
I hadn't read the book. You tracked down, I guess Olivia had written some books and some information, and you got some information from Olivia.
Well, no, these are quotes
yes,
from
I know.
Her book. Yeah.
But I did not know about Olivia feeling as strongly as she did.
Yeah.
And still loving Maui.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that. I thought she wanted to get out of here.
No,
when
she still at the house.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's also very interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, I think what makes this book different is because of the connection to Hawaii and Maui.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the artists talk about the impact of that.
They do. Yeah.
And, you know, it's a little different. That's all I can say. Yeah. I don't think it's the usual book.
Oh, no, it's not at all the usual book. But it also, I mean, whenever you're doing a book, John,
yeah.
you do self-reflection as well. That's part of the process. You can't go through all of these years and years and years of interview without sometimes stopping and going through memories as well. And so what in self-reflection did this bring to you as you go through your life and these times
well,
with these people?
I mean, I just really can only say that it just made me feel so blessed. I mean, I always feel blessed to live on Maui anyway. I've been here 42 years. And to be so blessed to be able to write for the Maui News and have access to all these incredible musicians. These were musicians who I adored when I was growing up, you know, and somehow then I'm sitting or on the phone talking to them, you know. So it's just been such a thrill. And, yeah.
Well, you bring that up in an interesting way in the beginning.
Oh.
In the beginning of the book, you bring up about your background and
uh-huh.
and some fascinating thing. I want to know how you landed up having Paul Simon
yeah,
at the
I
school.
Yeah, it was insane.
Well, so how did that happen?
Well, and David Bowie playing my high school dance.
How did that happen?
So I went to this school. It was a boarding school. I was in a boarding school, right?
Uh-huh.
And kind of an elite boarding school, you know, I guess you could say.
Did you come from wealth?
No, not at all. Okay. No, I got a scholarship. I got a scholarship.
Oh,
to go,
cool.
Yeah. And so, you know, it was kind of esteemed. It was founded in 1580 or something.
Uh-huh.
And so different people would come through, and then one day.
Doing lectures, you mean, or what?
Well, I don't know, just. Yeah, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so one day we had an announcement over the school tannoy system that American folk singer was in town and he wants to give us a free concert. Didn't say what the name was.
Yeah.
And so we all trooped into the assembly hall and there was this little guy sitting there and it was Paul Simon. And he was started singing these songs, and he sang Homeward Bound, and it was he said it was one of the first times he'd ever played it live.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. And it turned out that he actually, this town was called Brentwood, and he'd fallen in love with Kathy's song in Brentwood, right? And so he was hanging out. This was, he started off with Garfunkel, then they split up, then he came to England for a while, and he was hanging out in Brentwood, and so that's how it happened.
Amazing.
Right?
How did David Bowie land up?
Well, you know, we'd have these summer school dances before the summer break. And what we had this one night, it was this group called Davy Jones and the Lower Third. And it was David Bowie before he was famous, playing like soul hits. And he was great even back then.
Soul hits.
Yeah, like Land of a Land of a Thousand Dances, all that kind of stuff.
Wow. Was he all decked out and dressed up in his nice suits?
I honestly can't remember. I just remember it was this guy and his band. And, of course, later it was David Bowie. Like, oh, my God, he played at my high school. Yeah.
So you know, and I know, there's certain artists that touch us in certain ways. And I've done, you know, like I say, thousands of interviews. But sometimes you can get intimidated by an artist.
I do.
Did you sometimes feel nervous about?
Yeah. Yeah.
And how do you break that kind of moments?
Especially when I meet him in person.
Yeah.
You know, like I met Sting backstage at a show and it was like, oh, I don't know what to say. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think because of the anonymity and the way on the phone, I'm not so intimidated.
Uh-huh.
Unless, you know, like once I interviewed Leon Russell, why are you calling me? I thought we were supposed to have an interview. Who are you? And it was like, oh my God. And then he mellowed out, but it was like, and then the worst one was Peter Tosh. Oh my God.
Oh, is he stoned?
Oh, out of his mind. This was in Lahaina or Kanapali.
I had one with Edgar Winter, and he was completely unintelligible. I don't know what it was like. I don't understand anything. And it was live on the air. What did you say?
Yeah, anyway, Peter Tosh was.
And Peter Tosh. I know. I actually interviewed him once when he was playing when I was in Sonoma County, and I had to go on the bus. And he was sitting in the back of this bus, his touring bus, to walk from the front to the back.
You got high.
The smoke was like, you could not see from the front to the back of the bus. And then trying to do an interview was different.
No. You'd ask him a question, and he'd go, yeah, one. Mm-hmm. Or like, well, blah, 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 Mick Jagger, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, no mon. You know? It was yeah, mon, no mon, basically. Yeah.
So there are some times where you don't know how far to push, but you've done enough interviews and you've seen enough interviews. Where there's what they're called soft interviews, and there's kind of sometimes more hard interviews. And there's a fine line between keeping it nice and friendly, right? Or taking that next step to ask a question you might not normally ask, right? And how do you determine where to press and try to find out what's kind of behind it?
I don't think I do that.
You don't do that ever? Yeah.
I mean, I'm really interested in their creative path and maybe their spiritual path too.
Mm-hmm.
And so, well, you know, I mean, you know, I interviewed Smokey Robinson recently, and I knew he'd gone through a major addiction situation, and I knew he'd gone through a healing, and that it had a profound impact on him. And so I asked him about it, and, you know, maybe he wouldn't talk about it, but he did talk about it. And, you know, and he basically went to see a healer in L.A. And he was like, major addiction. And she did, like, faith healing, put hands on him, and she fell to the floor twice working on him. And from that moment, he's never done another drug.
And from what I've heard, he's just in amazing shape for 82 years old.
Yeah, he's incredible.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes you can go those places and ask him maybe about an addiction or something. And, you know, I mean, like, I remember interviewing Walter Becker when he was deep in his little thing.
Yes.
And, you know, it was pretty weird.
Walter Becker, I interviewed, and it was a strange one. Sometimes these artists are so smart that it's hard to keep up with their minds. You almost have to get inside their head to figure out where their brain's going, you know, to and I kind of, I'm intuitive level.
I'm English.
Cindy. You're English.
I went to college.
Walter Brecker's brain was so fast.
Oh, both him and Donald.
Brilliant.
Both brilliant. You know?
Brilliant.
And even
yeah.
interviewing Donald, you know, he was very open about his you know, psychological problems and stuff. I was very surprised. Again, it was, you know, being on Maui, and I guess he chilled out, and here we are.
And he may have written some of your interviews, and you know,
I don't know. That. Yeah, anyway. Yeah.
So you did a beautiful segment on Bob Dylan. And, of course, I'm a Bob Dylan fan, and I happen to have gone to that show that was in Lahaina.
Yeah, yeah.
What year was that? I was trying to remember what year that was. Do you remember? It was early,
it was
80s.
Mid-80s.
No, or 90s, early 90s.
Oh, was it early 90s?
I think so, yeah.
I can't remember. Sorry.
When there was the Royal Lahaina tennis.
Yeah, the tennis stadium. Yeah, yeah, because I was working on it.
I didn't know. First of all, how did you get to go pick up Bob Dylan? That's amazing. You were called to pick him up from the airport?
Okay, I worked with Ken Rosine, the promoter.
Oh, right.
And so
Ken.
I was like his Maui dude, you know? So we worked on a number of shows together, and one of them was Bob. And so I went to the airport with a couple of vans to pick Bob up.
At the airport in
Kanapali. Yeah. Uh-huh. And it completely blew my mind because we only had room for, you know, a certain number of people and, you know, so Bob says.
And they had probably the guitars and everything.
Yeah,
whatever
exactly.
They had, instruments.
And
yeah.
Bob says, I'll wait. So he waited with my girlfriend at the time.
Dangerous.
Sitting.
Dangerous.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. Sitting on the bench outside the airport. Bob Dylan sitting on the bench. I was like, you know. And my friend Brooke said it was the most amazing conversation because they talked about everything. Under for 45 minutes, he was sitting there.
And he talked?
Yeah. He talked the entire time. Cosmology, music, creativity, poetry. She said it was mind-blowing.
No one says it. Everyone says you can't talk to Bob Dylan, that he doesn't give answers or talks.
Yeah.
Don't you wish you'd had a tape recorder for that one?
So anyway, so that's how I got to meet him backstage because I was working it. But here's the funniest thing. So I got friendly with his bodyguard, who was like a Cockney dude from London. And so we hung out a little bit for a couple of days, you know. And there's an English term, bother, which is like trouble. So he says, John, if you ever any bother back home, let me know and I'll sort it for you. I love that. Like, he's going to go and do someone in for me, you know.
Who would have guessed that one?
I know.
But when you got to talk to Bob Dylan, you didn't get to really have a conversation?
No, because that was it. He looks up at me and says, I hear you're a writer. And he's like, oh, my God, Bob Dylan is talking to me. And, of course, I was, as you said, talk about being, like, tongue-tied.
Yes.
I mean, I didn't even know what to say. Yep.
You know, that's interesting, too, because you have, I think you said this in the book, or I remember some part you said that. Same thing I felt. You don't ever want to treat these people like they're other than just another person.
Yeah.
If you do, then there's something that goes, a wall that goes up. If you can talk to them one-on-one,
yeah,
there's a different attitude you get in an interview than.
Yeah, you know, and there's not agents and managers hovering, and, you know, so it's a little more. And of course, again, it's, I think, the Maui vibe, you know, it's a little more chill. So
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I you know, what interviews really surprised you with things that were like either way, they were friendly or they weren't as friendly, or things that they said that might blow your mind? I'm sure many things probably surprised you over the years that were said or revealed maybe. you can't
he's
say
going
that.
Blank. No, I'm not, you know. I mean, you know, Cindy, when I started this book,
yes,
it was 700 pages long, 150 musicians in it. And of course, I'd have lost money if I'd tried to publish that. So I had to chop it back to like about 80 musicians.
That's the hardest part.
So I'm already working on volume two. There's 90 musicians in volume two.
Wow.
So it's like for me to like track back to that, to answer that question, it was like, you know, because there's so many of them. It's a bit, I mean, I can only say that, you know, like talking to Grace Slick or something, you know, who are just like, oh, my God, the goddess of rock, you know. And just such a thrill.
Really?
You know? Oh, yeah. She gave me this great, great quote. It came from Ram Dass. She quoted Ram Dass saying, even though intellectually you know it's not going to do any good, you have to do what you think is right.
That's a very good quote.
Yeah. And that was Grace Slick quoting that.
Then I haven't heard that quote before either.
Yeah.
Now, you quoted Yogananda through George Harrison. I think it was George Harrison. Yogananda, of course, was very important to the Beatles and to George Harrison. And I heard they used and carried his book quite often, but everything else can wait, but your search for God cannot wait.
Exactly.
And I think you put that as your beginning quote, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
On the George.
That was one of like George's mantras, you know.
Yeah, and George is an amazing person. I had a chance to meet him two or three or four different occasions in Los Angeles. But he is a master of sorts, and you're very, very spiritual in nature. What did you get in his vibe? He's got an
interesting... I've never met him.
Oh, you didn't get to meet him?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought you did at the house when he was out there.
No.
Yeah, because Nihiko was his home.
No, I again, you know, Jimmy and George, I wrote about because of the Maui connection.
Yeah.
Everyone else I interviewed in the book, right?
Because George actually, as far as we know, never did play Maui unless he did something.
He
with
actually
the
came
Christmas.
To that Bob Dylan concert.
You're kidding.
He flew out in a helicopter. Yeah.
Came to the Bob Dylan?
I don't know if he actually, I'm not sure if he actually was at the concert, but he came that evening and he hung out with Bob in Kanapali.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. So the people who you found, and many of them are wonderful kind of low-key people that move to Maui that live here.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, we've seen some come and go, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The thing is, of course, that it's hard and it's a long ways away from anywhere. We know that. Mm-hmm. And then if they have to go out on the road, they're leaving a lot of themselves behind here on the road a lot. But some of them really have made the ability to make this home. I mean, Mick talks about...
Oh, Mick loves...
John McVie talks about... talks about... All the ones, the people, and some that he's brought, actually encouraged to come to live here, including, I think, John McVie, he encouraged, and Stevie, and others to come
Stevie
live
Stevie said
here.
It was Mick. Mick was like, you know, Mick wanted all of us to come to Maui, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, he loves it here. It changed his life. It healed him, basically.
Yeah. There was a whole interesting 2 years, and in a way, maybe it was good because you could work on your book there, where you were not doing. No entertainment for space. Right.
I started on this about 8 years ago, and then I kind of dropped it for a while, and then when the pandemic hit, you know, because I was a school counselor too, right, and a counselor in school, and so I retired from that job.
Smart.
Having
a second job is good.
2019, and so it was like, whoa, here comes the pandemic. So I basically spent 2 years working on it. And what I did is I refined the interviews, added stuff, updated, added quotes from other sources. You know, because you can, as long as it's under 50 words, you can quote other sources. You know,
I didn't realize that rule.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like. It's a given, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know if someone could sue me, maybe, but I mean, you know, the one thing you can do, you cannot quote lyrics from a song without getting permission.
That's a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah. So, like, for example, Mike Love was, when I was talking about Hawaii with him, he started singing a Beach Boys song about Hawaii. I couldn't quote it.
Whoa.
Because I can't quote the lyrics, right?
Wow.
I'd have to pay for the rights to have them in the printed page. Yeah? But you can quote a song title.
So when you did Mike Love, was that when he was living in Hana?
Was he in Hana then? No, he'd left Hana.
Oh, yeah.
I've interviewed him about three times. Uh-huh. So that was the last one was post Hana. Yeah.
Prince, did you get a chance to interview Prince?
No, this was an email interview I did with him. Yeah.
An email?
Yeah.
An email interview. What's that like?
Well, you had to send questions.
Oh,
and then he answered the questions. You know?
Okay, I've never done an email interview.
Yeah. Oh, I've done a couple of them, which is great because cut and paste. It's very simple.
I had never thought of that.
Yeah, so he's, you know, and I asked him spiritual questions and about his diet, and so I got all that kind of stuff out of him, you know.
About his diet?
Yeah, because he's a vegan. He was a vegan at that time. Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
See, there's a lot of... folks, I'm talking to John Woodhouse about his new book.
Legends on Maui.
Music Legends on Maui is available on Amazon. By the way, if you're a Kindle... Remember, Kindle Prime, the one where you can get that. It's free.
Actually, it's even, you can just look inside, and you can just look inside free, right, for about the first 60 pages.
And you know what? Speaking of that.
Oh, I've got photos in there.
You're psychic. I was going to say that same thing. You've got amazing photos in there.
You've got
some really good quality photos. I didn't realize you were that good a photographer. A lot of them black and white, right?
Actually, they're black and white because of the cost of printing.
Yeah, it is.
Right, so a lot of them were color, but because it's, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So
I think
black.
They only allow you one or two color pictures without extra
cover,
fees or something.
The cover can be color, you know. So, yeah, I mean, I've got a couple of album covers. I'm in a Maui book. A book of photographs of Maui. I got a couple of photos. And yeah, I love photography. So, you know, when I can, I take photos.
And this is before iPhones. Most of the pictures were actually with a real camera,
they're
right?
They're real photos, yeah. Hello. Yeah, there's about 35 of them. And the other thing that makes it different is I have at least a 30-plus page bibliography. So anytime I quote, it's like an academic thing, right? Anytime I quote like Rolling Stone or something, you've got a reference in the back. So there's 30 pages of references. Yeah.
That's a lot of work.
It was a hell of a lot of work.
Oh, I'd never have the patience for that.
Oh, my God, yeah.
No, I mean, that's a lot.
No, so it's almost like, you know, it's not just your regular do-do-do book, you know.
Yeah.
It's a, you know, I put a lot of effort into it.
You did. And so this is only, though, part one. You have, and it's big. I mean, how many pages is this book?
It's about 400 pages.
I mean, that's a huge book.
I don't know. Yeah.
No, it really is. Most books are not 400.
And I had to keep, you know, because of the cost factor and how much one would make and everything, and because it's on Amazon, right? I had to keep chopping the interviews down, you know, which was a shame. But, you know, I tried to get to the nitty gritty, you know, the zen of it or whatever, you know. So, yeah.
You know what's interesting these days is, and I think I told you this because we talked a couple times before it came out, almost everyone these days, I couldn't believe that the Bruce Springsteen, Barack Obama book was all done by interviews.
Wow.
No, it was recorded. They just recorded their talks.
Wow. Incredible, huh?
And Paul McCartney.
Mm.
That book, the one he charged like $50 or more for, it was all done by interviews.
Wow.
I believe the Paul Simon one was also done by interviews.
Wow.
Speaking of Paul Simon, of course, we love Paul Simon.
We love Paul Simon.
We love Paul Simon. I mean, to me, you know, I'm a fan of his. And I mean, to me, I'm a lyricist, and his lyrics are some of the finest lyrics.
Because, you know, before I interviewed him, I was listening to his music a lot. And I was struck by how his artistry and his gift continues to this day, compared to most of his peers who, but he was still putting out brilliant music and experimental music too. I mean, it was like I suddenly realized, like, there's hardly anyone that comes close to him.
Well, when you think of how he brought world music and African music and the whole beat, how he brought a lot of things that only like people like Peter Gabriel and some others made hits out of some of those songs, which is amazing that he could do that.
And it was obviously he had to become solo because, you know, you would listen even from some of the early solo albums. There's no way art would have been on those albums.
No,
you know,
no way. No.
It was just too out there for him. You know?
Yeah. Anyway, no.
Yeah.
And did you know that he and Keola Beamer became friends?
Yes, I know.
I do
know that.
And Keola Beamer is another brilliant.
I love Keola. He's in the book.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah. Paul flew to Kauai and taught at one of Keola's music camps.
How amazing is
that?
Yeah,
it's brilliant, huh?
Got a special guest here.
Paul Simon.
Yeah. But Paul wanted, when he came to learn a little bit about slack guitar music and reached out to, and Keola's like, wow,
Paul told me that he loves Keola's music. Yeah.
Did you find with some of these musicians their love of Hawaiian music, and did you see some or hear some of that from some of these people that they enjoyed? That happened to me with Jackson Browne. Remember when Jackson Browne played with, I think it was it David Crosby, it was Stephen Stills, and I think a couple of the others.
Wasn't it Graham Nash and David Crosby?
Yeah,
it was them.
And
John Cruise was on that.
Right. Well, yeah. John Cruise actually played in the Courtyard. Jackson Browne came out and I'd interview him like three or four times. So I saw him. No one noticed him. But he was standing outside just watching John Cruise. And he said to me, John Cruise is so amazing. I just love this guy, you know. And you know, there's some people that realize the artistry of some these people. And slack key guitar music in ways that we may not realize.
Taj Mahal. Fell in love with Hawaiian music years ago.
Yes.
You know? I mean, he was talking about Gabby as like I forgot the reference he used. You know, like Robert Johnson or something of Hawaiian music, you know. So some of these guys were very hip to it, you know. Yeah. Bonnie Raitt, her, I think it was her granddad, was was playing her Hawaiian steel guitar.
Not.
Yeah.
John Raitt's father.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So she was learning like how to play steel guitar as a kid from Hawaiian music.
Really?
Yeah, that's in the book.
That's amazing. I wouldn't have guessed that. I wouldn't have ever known that.
Of course, then she got into blues, but it was like, yeah.
I love Bonnie Raitt.
Yeah.
No,
me too,
she's absolutely amazing. Yep. And she loves Hawaii as well. Of course, Hutch Hutchins.
Hutch.
Yes. Hutch is the bass player, lives here.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
And goes out on tour all the time. And he's great. And he's been with her for years and years and years and years and years, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, truly amazing music that happens. Now, Steven Tyler.
Yeah.
You laugh.
He's very entertaining.
he's
a lot of F words.
Well, yes, I can think of a few, but yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, he's an interesting dude. What was your, and I know you've seen him at a few events live, obviously. He was there at the Blues Festival that Willie Kay did, and he played at Mick Fleetwood's opening party that night and everything. What was your when you got to talk to him?
You know, he's one of these very charismatic dudes, you know, and he's very entertaining and he's got a lot to say and he keeps on saying it. And, you know, he fell in love with Maui and, you know, he was, I think in the book he talks about how the first time Aerosmith played in Honolulu, they flew over to Maui and they drove down and got stuck in the sand in McKenna or something.
Seriously?
Yeah. And then when he America's Got Talent, whatever the show is, right?
Uh-huh.
You know? Yeah. And, you know, he was a judge. And so he made a bunch of money that allowed him to buy a house down in McKenna.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing stories.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I have to say you were very, very, very lucky, and I am a little envious. No, because you got to talk to some of these people that we just adore and love.
Yeah.
You know, my whole life's been around music and stuff, and I've had a lot of wonderful chances. But I mean, you got a chance to do some amazing interviews, and I tell you, folks, when you read this book, you really feel like you're there. I mean, they're very personal interviews that are very engrossing. I guess the word is you feel engrossed and something draws you in because there's enough insight that you get from these people that makes it very unique.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I hopefully that does come across.
Yeah,
because
it does. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to close this one out here on Facebook, but I'll post it and it'll be on. We have a couple minutes left. I have to let people know again, you don't understand, folks, how difficult it really, really is to do a book.
Yeah.
And you know what? Books are almost like albums in a way. It's hard to make any money off them.
Oh, yeah. You know, okay. So if I make any money, great. If I don't make any money, great. You know, it's a labor of love. It's a passion.
Yes.
I mean, I just feel very honored that I've got to talk to these guys. It's like, why don't I put this together just as a historical record? If anyone wants to buy it, great. If they don't, it's no problem. I just loved doing this, and I'm just happy that I put it out.
You know, I even think that the musicians who are in this book would enjoy reading not only about them, but about the other musicians.
Yeah.
I think it would be a very interesting read.
Yeah, it's probably going to be available. Well, it's available, it's available online, of course, but it's probably going to be available at Mick's store in Paia.
Oh, wonderful.
And is it La Vie en Rose? Is that the store in Paia? La Vie en Rose? I think that's the name.
I haven't been there yet.
Them too, I think. I'm going to, you know, I'm just starting on the promotion of it. This is basically the first interview.
Oh, I feel honored, my God.
You are honored.
I am very honored.
Yeah, so I'm going to start a little thing going because what else have I got to do?
Well, talked about maybe do a Barnes & Noble thing or something.
Yeah, maybe
I'll
do Barnes & Noble.
Yeah,
you know.
A book signing or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I do still like books, and you are having books, and thank you for that because there are people that actually I found out from my books that people do not read Kindles. There are some people that don't, you know.
I much prefer a tangible real book.
Especially with pictures.
Especially pictures, yeah, exactly.
And you can get them signed by the artist when they come.
Ah, there you go.
You can't do that with a Kindle book.
Sign my Kindle, right, yeah. Whoops.
Amazon,
yes.
And name again?
Music Legends on Maui.
By John Woodhouse.
Thank
you, John.
All right, Cindy, thank you.